So Anthony and or Matt Essick, who is just giggling. We're just going with the Pain song to get started. Anything specific about the Rascal Flatts?
It hurts, man. It hurts.
It does.
But Essick did give me this song suggestion, so it was only right to describe the feeling.
I looked over because I was very focused on getting everything set up for the show, getting our notes in place, everything for First and 10, which we'll get to in 10 seconds. And I looked over, and Matt Essick is just standing there with headphones on and a bleep-eating grin on his face. Now that you've eaten your stuff, get out of here, Essick. Your show is over. Go home. That's what I want for you. I want you, the pain of you walking, Rascal Flatts. Anthony, hit the First and 10 thing. Maybe. Come on, computer. We have enough pain. We don't make us play the Rascal Flatts song again. Anthony's really struggling over there. Anyway, the Commanders lost. It's the first home loss of the year. That's what we're going to talk about. We'll talk about Michael Phillips coming up at 5 o'clock. And we get started with...
It's time to get the breakdown started. First up, 10 observations.
Mr. Gizai, and just boom, put it right on the ground.
It's First and 10.
So, a 28-27 loss, eh?
Number one.
First things first. I don't want to overreact to a one-point loss to a good team, so I'm not gonna. Simple as that. That team, the Pittsburgh Steelers, is very much Washington's equal. That's a good thing. That's a good team. Commanders, you're a good football team. It was a one-point game. A one-point game that had a bunch of bad calls in it, both ways. We'll talk about it. But including in that bad call, in my opinion, a first down call that... should have been made at the end of the game with Zach Ertz. That would have put Washington on the verge of field goal range. And let's say for a second they get that call. And they get another 5 yards. And then Zane Gonzalez, he gets to be the latest kicking hero, replacing Austin Seibert. And the Commanders win 30-28. How much different are we talking about today, that game? Not very differently. We shouldn't. And so just because, yes, the L hurts. Yes. It is pain in the standings. Yes, you could have entered the week against Philadelphia with an extra game in hand before you play Philadelphia. All of these things are true, but I do think it is worth saying that was a one-point football game, which they lost to another good team. And so, yeah, this loss stings, and Quinn talked about it afterwards, as did a bunch of guys on the team, and they should feel that. Because they should understand the lesson, to use Dan's language, is to say, against good teams, everything matters. But this isn't a team that's incapable of making winning plays. They've done it time and again this season. They just didn't. That's the NFL. So let's talk about the not winning plays and some of them that went down. But also, within the context, acknowledging that this is still a good football team, and that doesn't change with a one-point loss to another good football team.
Number two.
Okay, let's talk about it. Benjamin St. Juice. Here's the thing about Benjamin St. Juice. He seems to have a negative clutch gene. And that's an issue. As this game went on, watching it live and also watching it back on film and looking at his body language during the game, it felt like he was nervous after the early calls that went against him. And he had the PI on Freiermuth, and that was, it wasn't 100% of the time it gets called, but it's the correct call. Like, that was PI. He has another really great play early that's undone by the Jeremy Chinn roughing. And it just kind of has this body language of like, can I buy a break? Can I ever do anything right and be rewarded for it? Or can I never not have the bad stuff happen when I'm involved? And there is a little bit of that like nervous tick energy to him throughout parts of this game. I think he really settled in the middle where he was just solid in coverage. He was physical against the run, like all that kind of stuff. But this is a guy that every time he makes a play, he looks around to see if there's a flag. He literally doesn't know where the line is, not because he doesn't intellectually understand what is pass interference but what is not, but it's because he's called for it so frequently, especially the last couple of weeks, that like he some of those were bad calls, and thus he doesn't know what he can and can't do. And all these crews call it differently. So sometimes you can get away with more, sometimes less. But this is also true. What I'm about to say is really true. And don't get super mad before I get done saying all the things I have to say. But down in, down out, he's their best cornerback. He had some nice plays on the ball in this game. He has been an incredibly sure tackler this season. He's also in the right spot that prevents a bunch of throws. The idea that the only good corners are the ones who get thrown at and force incompletions or interceptions is absurd on its face. Really great coverage is so sticky that the quarterback doesn't even bother throwing it in the first place. And there's no way to tally in the statistics for the guy played perfect coverage and the QB didn't bother throwing it and say quarterback rating against. But, there is clearly a huge problem when the ball is thrown his way. And this and the negative clutch gene come together in the 3rd and 9 and a couple of other big spots yesterday. And it's big spots where other teams are clearly comfortable taking the risk of throwing at him, where his lack of ball skills and his reputation for PIs means that that is a pretty low risk, high reward endeavor for them. And I do think it is fair at this point to ask, not necessarily a question about Benjamin, because we kind of know who he is. But why does this staff keep putting him in that spot? A staff, by the way, that's doing a lot right. I'm not saying this is a bunch of dum-dums. This group is fantastic, and they're very good coaching defensive backs. But from a play call standpoint, we ask these things, and we're told, like, we ask them, hey, what about safety help? And I asked Quinn yesterday at the podium, and he's basically like, well, sometimes you have to take your chances in man coverage. And my question that I've still never in 10 years of covering the NFL had a great answer told to me to is, why? Why do you have to take your chances in man coverage? We've seen that movie before. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Benjamin St. Juice is a good zone corner. That is a very specific label, but he is a good zone corner. In the most high leverage of spots, stop asking him to play man-to-man. And if that means in man situations when Marshawn Lattimore is ready, you play Mike Sainristil and Marshawn Lattimore, okay, fine. I think that's probably not the right move because I don't think that Sainristil is better than St. Juice, and there's a lot of evidence in yesterday's game, not to mention other games, that that is true. PFF grades, they're not even close, and Noah Igbinoghene is literally the worst graded regular player on the defense yesterday. But Mikey competes his face off, and in man-to-man situations in a big spot, I'd probably just take my chances with that versus Benjamin St. Juice and the analysis by paralysis that seems to go on in his head. But the problem for Benjamin is when he gets up and, like, this dude is so accountable. He doesn't shy away from the tough questions. He answers for it. He says the right thing. He understands. He's a stand-up guy. And that is worth something on a human level. And humanity is way more important than football in the long run. But in the short term, and talking about the football, saying, next time I'll do better, when we've had previous times, and this is the next time, kind of winds up ringing hollow when the next time the same thing keeps happening. And so eventually, as a staff, you have one of two choices. You can stop putting him in that position by calling something different, especially against a Pittsburgh team that wants to do the exact thing that they did, or you can put another guy in that position, and they don't have the switch guy option available until Lattimore is healthy. And that's just the reality of the situation, the way I see it, and I've yet to been told something that makes me change my mind on that. I'm open-minded because these guys are really smart and they're good play callers, and Quinn's a great play caller, and they've been around the league a long time. But I have yet to been told something that makes me change my mind on this, because at the end of the day, they lost on Pittsburgh's terms. If you're gonna beat me, I want to lose on my terms. I made you do the thing that I didn't think you were good at, and you proved me wrong. Congratulations. I did my thing, you did your thing was better. To lose to them on a fade ball, with no safety help in a man-to-man situation. Yes, Benjamin played it poorly, but I also don't get why he's in that position, why Russ even has the thought to throw that thing in the first place. And by the way, what a sick throw by Wilson. There's a couple, the couple that he hits in this game, and he missed a lot of them. The couple that he hits, we're talking balls within 2 yards of the sideline, vertically dropping out of the sky. It is ridiculous, some of the stuff that Wilson did in this game on the big plays. We're down to down. He wasn't very good. But, man, to just keep on keeping on the same way when we've seen that movie before really grinds my gears. Again, I'm not going to overreact on the whole of what it means for the football team, but this is something on a more micro level that drives me absolutely up a wall. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, the rest of our first and 10, including that play by St. Juice, yeah, that definitely contributes to them losing the game. But there was a drive earlier that I think was an even bigger, more emblematic issue in this game. We'll talk about it and the rest of what we saw from the offense next. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Continuing on our pick six, or sorry, not our pick six. We'll get to our pick six at six, but it's currently 4:15. So it's time to continue our first and 10. We got two down, so let's speed through the last eight here.
Number three.
Well, hurry up, if you will. The drive that cost the Commanders the game as much as any other, in my opinion, was not the Benjamin St. Juice gives up the game-winning touchdown. It's earlier in the game after Washington had gone up 24-14. Here's a chance to make a statement and cement a 10-point lead, make Pittsburgh get in a passing situation where they're starting to chase the game and where your defense can tee off a little bit, just you're in way better coverage structures, all the things that Washington has been able to do at times this year with positive game flow. Instead, they shoot themselves in the foot with bad plays and penalties on a drive that could have ended three or four different times in a punt. It's third and eight early in the drive, and Jaylen Warren just is completely forgotten about on a check down. Wilson finds him. He runs for 26 yards. Yikes. Two plays later, after a sack, it's now second and 19. Second and 19. You hold here, force a couple incompletions. It's probably a punt. You might have to work out of your own end zone if they can pin you deep, but you're probably talking about a punt because they're out near midfield. Instead, Sandra still gives up a short post slash long slant to George Pickens for 34 yards. Now all of a sudden it's first down by the goal line. And yet, two plays later, can you at least force a field goal here? That'd be cool. You have what should be a third and eight because you force two incompletions. Or sorry, you have 2 yard run stuff and then force an incompletion. The problem is on second and eight on the incompletion, Dante Fowler lined up offsides. So instead of third and eight, it's now second and three. Two plays later, touchdown, 24-21. And this just goes to wrap up kind of what I talked about in the first point and the long BSJ second point. It's not on BSJ. It's not on Johnny Newton for jumping off sides. It's not on Zach Ertz for not getting an extra yard of depth or, I don't know, confusing a ref into thinking that he got a first down. It's not on the refs. It's a one-point game. And it could be any of those things because ultimately it's all of them. Everything mattered because those are the stakes against good teams. All right, some more details from this game.
Number four.
Pittsburgh was aggressive. I've watched all the All-22 offense and I've started to get going on the defense too. Obviously, full tape review tomorrow during Take Command with Logan. But Pittsburgh was aggressive in shutting down Jaden Daniels as a runner in this game. They actually ran probably 7, 8, maybe 9 or 10 zone reads in this game. And the second the Pittsburgh edge felt that he was unblocked, which is what you do in a zone read, a read option, right? You leave a player unblocked. If that player commits to the running back, quarterback pulls it out and runs. If that player commits to the quarterback or is non-committal, now you've got numbers on the front side. They were really good at covering up the front side, but the second TJ Watt or Alex Highsmith or Preston Smith, whoever it was on that edge, felt like they were unblocked, they sprinted their face off at Jaden Daniels. And so he even got hit on a couple of those, took some bumps. And it just completely took away Jaden as a runner. Patrick Queen also had a great day. You call it a spy or just call it being diligent, chasing down Daniels. They were awesome in terms of, instead of creating a pocket, they almost box you in. They set really high vertical edges, and then the interior guys are really good. They also blitzed a little bit more than they had previously. They just had an awesome plan for Daniels as a runner, and as a result, he was completely ineffective as a runner for the first time all year.
Number five.
Because of that, this was the game that Jaden, quote-unquote, most looked like a rookie since the Tampa game in the opener, but I actually wouldn't even phrase it that way once you think about it a little bit more. I think he looked like a quarterback that was facing the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the Steelers are really, really good defensively. He was unable to do some of the things he normally does. He felt a little bit sped up. Nothing changed about his game except for the opponent in a lot of ways. Some of those windows got a little tighter. Some of the throws had to be made a little bit faster. Some of the scrambles aren't there because Patrick Queen is somehow just as fast as Jaden Daniels and played the best game he's played all year. So Jaden's amazing. He did some high level stuff at times in this game. There's obviously quite a number of drops. There's some missed throws, but all in all, like, that's, I mostly put that on a good defense.
Number six.
The one area where, man, that got even more emphasized was the tackle play in this game for Washington was not good. And it is amplified by the fact that you're facing Alex Highsmith and TJ Watt. Coleman had a pretty nightmarish day after having a really good week in his first time as a full-time starter. But Alex Highsmith is a pro's pro, and he just absolutely bullied him all day, whether it was bull rushes, whether it was speed around the edge, dipping inside. Pittsburgh also knew, like, hey, that's a rookie that hasn't seen a lot of stuff yet, and a lot of the help is going to go to their fourth tackle and Trent Scott on the other side against TJ Watt. So they ran some stunts and some picks and all these different things at Brandon Coleman, and he had trouble picking some of it up of, like, who am I even supposed to be blocking in the first place? And that sped Jaden up quite a bit. Meanwhile, the run game is really where the right side hurt. And Trent Scott not having the power, the mobility, and the punch that Andrew Wiley has really, really hurt this run game. Obviously, B-Rob not being there hurts it as well. But even, for instance, I'll give you one play. The hold on John Bates. What's supposed to happen there is Trent Scott should get enough of whoever was crashing in there. I think it was Hayward. Needs to get enough so that he slows him down and allows Bates to get over in front of him and seal that block. Instead, Scott just nothing punches the air, gets up to the second level on the double team, and Bates is left behind like, how the heck am I supposed to hit this block? He's out leveraged. The idea is that the first guy in the double team creates better leverage so that the second guy can get over. It turns then into a solo block, and then the first guy leaves for the next level. And the timing, the lack of power, all that kind of stuff leaves Bates screwed. He winds up getting the hold, knocks out a first yard or a first down carry for Chris Rodriguez. Now, on the very next play, they get away, by the way, with a hold in the end zone. TJ Watt probably should have been a safety, but that's the play where Jaden misses Luke McCaffrey. Could have made up for it, but they didn't. And that is kind of the state of play for tackles, and hopefully it's better on Thursday. One, because the Eagles' edges aren't as good. Some of the alignments are not as tricky. And also, hopefully, Wiley is back and Cornelius Lucas is back. At least one, if not both of them.
Number seven.
I don't know what the hell has happened to the Commanders' screen game, but Austin Ekeler literally can't get open on a screen anymore. And I don't know whether it's him not doing a good job of getting to the right spaces in time. He looks like he runs into people a lot. And I'm like, dude, it's a screen. Get where Jaden can see you and be where you're supposed to be. But also, it might not be on Ekeler. It might be on the offensive linemen who are not, you know, sending the defensive line past them in the right ways. Sometimes they're taking on blocks and getting bumped into Ekeler. I don't know whether Jaden is fading at the right angles and with enough depth to kind of draw the defense towards him so that way he can lob the ball over the top to Ekeler. I don't know if he trusts lobbing the ball over the top to a 5'7" Austin Ekeler. Wide receiver screen, same thing. They haven't been as crisp the last couple of weeks. I don't know what is happening, It's a conversation I'm going to have on the pod tomorrow with Logan. And I've been talking to a couple of reporter friends, and they're going to ask around a little bit. And I'm curious if, you know, we won't get Cliff again until next Thursday, but I'm curious if someone can find anything out. But that is a problem for Washington that they need to fix. They were so good, so detail-oriented on those screens earlier in the season, and they hit a ton of them. And they had hit the ones that they had run for kind of the middle stretch, but they had reduced the volume. Now it feels like they can't hit any of them. And obviously they had like the throwback attempt. They had the one where Diami and Terry both try to catch the ball. Just, it was a mess yesterday, and it really hurt them in some big spots because those are not only ways for them to stay on schedule, but potential big plays that get lost.
Number eight.
Fourth and four in the third quarter, right before Zane Gonzalez kicks a field goal. Actually, he kicks it on that fourth and four. I wish they would have gone for it. I am very over short field goals, especially with an offense this potent and a defense that's frankly playing down in, down out pretty well. If you don't get a field goal, if you miss, especially if you're like inside the 20-yard line, and that one was a little bit farther away, this one bothers me less, but by and large, if it's a 30-yard field goal, don't kick it. Go for it. What's the worst that happens outside of something that could also happen deeper in the field, like a blocked field goal? Okay, you don't get the fourth down, right? Okay, now they have the ball at their own eight. Play some defense. They're probably going to be conservative play calling. And defensive coaches often will be like, and really offensive coaches too, like everybody, right? I'm not trying to pick on DQ or anybody else here, but they're like, oh, well, that the momentum. Like, okay, tell your defense that's what's up. Hey, guys, we're going to be really aggressive and going for it on fourth down because we believe in you. So if our offense doesn't get it done, by the way, an offense that's 11 for 11 on the season on fourth downs, then we trust you as a defense to get the job done. So you get a quick three and out or four, five and out. They get a first down and they punt and you hopefully get good field position because they were starting the drive from their own eight. And again, that wasn't the exact situation there, but the reason I mentioned that exact situation, which was a little bit farther away, it was a short 40s field goal, is Jaden Daniels said after the game, hey, he was listening, you know, the what ifs, and he said, one of them that he said is, maybe if we go for it on fourth down instead of kicking the field goal, it's a different game. I think he wanted to go for that one. Not that there's some, I'm not trying to create like some friction or fraction that isn't there, but it shows you the aggressiveness of Daniels. And Quinn's gotten a lot of those situations right this year because there are games that he has managed really well, knowing that the aggressive meter needed to be turned down a little bit because the other offense was bad. I didn't think that was one of those games, one of those situations. I wish they had just gone for it, but that's just me.
Number nine.
Shout out to a Pittsburgh Steeler who doesn't get enough love. Deshaun Elliott, number 25, their safety. That dude is freaking awesome. He is all over the tape. He is fast. He is physical. He just rockets people at the line of scrimmage. He blew up a bunch of stuff. And between TJ Watt and Minkah Fitzpatrick and Patrick Queen, a lot of bigger names on that defense, Joey Porter Jr., who, by the way, if anybody calls this week and says, I wish they would have taken Joey Porter Jr. last year. How did they mess that up? That guy should be where St. Juice is. Then I'm just going to hang up on you. Because while I agree with you that Joey Porter Jr. is a better player, the worst corner arguably on the field yesterday was Joey Porter Jr. Terry and Noah had their way with him left, right, and sideways. Up, down, and sideways, north, west, every single direction. They torched that dude yesterday. So it happens because it's the NFL and it's hard. But Deshaun Elliott's freaking awesome, and he had a great game yesterday.
Number 10.
Last but not least, the referees. I hate the call with Ertz. I think when a receiver catches the ball coming back, the furthest most point is where he's supposed to get it. It is not the same as catching the ball, then running forward. Also, where they marked it was horrendous. At no point in that play was the ball at the 42-yard line. The 41 was the line to gain. It looked like the 40-ish, 40 or 41 point something is where he caught it. Just a heinously bad spot. A heinously bad lack of respot in review. And if they had respotted the ball and said he was an inch short, I would have said, yeah, all right, fine. But to not respot the ball, absolute joke. And here's the thing that I would say by and large, because there are some other missed calls. The Pickens on St. Juice face mask, horrendous. How Pickens is not ejected from that game for what he did to Mike Sainer still, when a referee breaks up the fight, I do not know. But yeah, they also missed a hold on the field goal attempt where John Bates horse collars Adoree Jackson or Dante Jackson. They missed TJ Watt getting held in the end zone. That should have been a safety. And the point is, stop missing so much stuff. This is a billion-dollar operation in the NFL. How are we this bad at this? How is it every single week in every close game, every fan base has legitimate gripes about missed calls? There, I know it is hard, but there has got to be a better way than this. They have billions of dollars. Figure it out. And specific to the first down stuff, how do we not have a high-definition camera aligned straight down the first down line on every single snap? It is patently absurd in a league with this much money that something this routine is screwed up this badly because they have dudes with chains out there and then referees trying to spot the ball who aren't on the first down line. What are we doing? There has got to be a better way. It is a billion-dollar operation. It didn't cost the Commanders the game because there were bad calls both ways, but that's not the point. The point is the officiating stunk, and it stinks way too much. So Roger Goodell, please freaking fix it. Amen. That is first and 10. When we get back, your turn. 301-230-0980. It is a Tell the Truth Monday. Your calls next on The Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980 as well. Checking out the comments and, of course, taking your calls because it is, after all, a Tell the Truth Monday.
It's Tell the Truth Monday on the Hoffman Show.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Call us now at 301-230-0980 to tell the truth about the Commanders.
You can't handle the truth!
Or hit the comment section at the Team 980 on YouTube.
All right, let's get to it at 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. Is the phone number. Let's go to Craig, but obviously not Craig Hoffman because that's me. I host the show and I didn't call my own show. Craig, great name. What you got on the Commanders?
Hey, Craig, it's Craig. Hey, man. I know a lot of people were upset about that game. I know a lot of people were upset about the St. Jude play, but I got to tell you, man, I am excited. They played a great game. They could have did better. There were some passes that was missed. But all in all, you're playing a Pittsburgh Steelers defense that is stout. They are aggressive. They got after us yesterday. But we played our tails off yesterday, I feel like. So with that being said, I'm encouraged. I think we go into Philly and beat Philly just with that encouragement coming. And what I really like about this team right now, Craig, is that they're all together. It's like a brotherhood, like DQ keeps saying. You know, when Jonathan jumped off sides, you know, you've seen them all come together as a team. So, yeah, that's all I got. I'm very encouraged. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. I appreciate it. I will say, Anthony, that sounds weird to say, even though it's his name. His name is my name, too. It feels like I'm talking about myself in the third person.
Oh, the Craig thing?
Thanks, Craig.
Yeah.
Normally I say that, like, sarcastically about myself. But that was sincere. It was genuine. Look, I think Craig made some great points.
He did indeed, Craig.
And you know, Craig talking about the brotherhood is correct. I will say it's a lot easier to have a brotherhood when things are going really well. If they were to lose two games in 5 days, what does that do to the brotherhood? Does it stick as strongly together? Does it vow to come back stronger? Or is there a crack in the foundation? These are things we hope not to have to find out because that means they lost. But it is something that is worth mentioning. They have bounced back from every piece of adversity this year. They've never really faced extended amounts of it. And that is a testament to them. But it also means that if it happens, we don't know what happens. I also think that they deserve a lot of credit for going out and putting up 27 points on a tough Steelers defense. And they did that without, you know, Steelers, by the way, someone made this comment in the chat on the Tell the Truth Monday. That the Steelers were coming off a bye. Steelers off a bye. You're down kind of two starting tackles. I don't know how you want to count it because, like, you're down your starter and your backup at right tackle. Wiley and Lucas are out. So you have a rookie at left tackle, your fourth string tackle at right tackle, your starting running back isn't there, and you still come out and put up 27 points and are in it until the bitter end. And who knows? If Johnny Newton doesn't jump off sides and they get a stop, maybe there's redemption for Olamide Zaccheaus and he takes a punt back to the house. By the way, they also had a special team snafu. But this is the thing. So did Pittsburgh. They had a dropped, you know, the first touchdown of the game for Washington comes on a three-play, 20-yard drive because Pittsburgh drops a wide-open fake punt. That's football. I think my, like, grand takeaway is that these teams are pretty equal. If they play 10 times, they split it pretty evenly, 5-5, maybe 4-6 one direction, but good luck predicting which one. And in year one of a rebuild, if you will, for Washington, long term, that's great. In the short term, that's also pretty good. Like, are we going to get to tears tomorrow? I guess we'll try to find space. It's a weird week because of the short week. But here, we'll do part of our NFL tier rankings right now. Washington and Pittsburgh are staying in prime contenders. Like, that's where they started the week. They played each other to a tie, but they played each other within a point. That's exactly what the tape was. It's not like one team secretly found a way to stay in it and the other team is just lucky to be there. And the other team should have run away with it. Like, they're even. They both belong at the top. That's real.
I think when you look at Washington and how we lost, I think it's fair to say we have glaring holes, glaring needs for the team.
I'm not saying, hold on, let me double click on that. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I don't want to lose this. I don't necessarily disagree, but what do you think that they are? I'm not saying you're wrong, but what are the glaring holes or needs?
So we can't stop the run.
The longest carry they had was 12 yards yesterday. They averaged 3.7 a carry. They gave up 140 yards on 43 carries. That's pretty good.
I think over time, though, as the game went on, they had a little bit more success. I think early in the game, we were able to stifle some of their runs. Najee, he ended up getting knocked out the game. But when he was back there, he had himself a bit of a day. I think Warren
and he averaged 2.7 a carry.
Warren and Patterson.
Patterson didn't do anything. Warren had a good game. Warren's a good player, by the way. Oh my God, that dude has pop.
Yeah.
But his longest carry was like 12, and he averaged like, I think, high threes, low fours.
Yeah.
Like, they're actually not. Now, look, I'm scared about Philly because some of the carries that Warren takes for 8 can turn into 80 for Saquon because he's Saquon. But that's against everybody. Like, there's no way that you can come out of that game. I'm sorry. You cannot come out of that game yesterday and be like, oh my God, the Commanders against the run. Pittsburgh ran the ball. It was, 43 times. 43 times for 140 yards. That is 3.3 a carry. The longest was 12. Jaylen Warren had a 12-yarder. Najee Harris had an 11-yarder. Basically, every other carry in the game was single digits. Not that giving up 7 on a regular basis is good, but they clearly weren't. The average was 3.3. Patterson had 3 carries for 14 yards.
In the second half, what did they lean on, though, Craig?
Well, just because they kept running.
When it was time for them to sustain, you know, drives, go score, when Warren fumbled on the 1-yard line, prior to that, they had run 14 plays, taken off 7 minutes of clock, just because they were running, converting on third down. And that's also another thing. We could not get off the field on third down. 7-for-16, unacceptable. When they had to score, they went to their bread and butter, and we had no answer for it.
See, I don't know that I agree with that. The thing they went to was go balls to down the field, and they missed on a lot of them, and then they hit a couple of them and got it. So here's that drive. I have the whole drive written down. First play, smoke screen to George Pickens. Should have been a face mask. They should have been inside their own 5-yard line.
Yep.
So they get away with it there. Warren for 5 on second down. It's 3rd and 1, and what do they go to? Do they run it for a first down, Anthony?
I think maybe.
Maybe not. Slant, Pickens on Sainer still. Next, Harris for 3. Harris for 6. 3rd and 1. They get the stuff. Should have been a fumble. Instead, Warren gets 4 yards on the next play. I guess they went for it on 4th down. Do I have that right? Or did I miss a play? But that's the one where Johnny Newton comes up with the football.
Yeah.
Let's see. The fumble drive. Let me look it up on here. Yeah. Pickens, 12 yards. Sander still. Harris for 3. Harris for 6. Harris stuffed. No gain. Warren gets 4 yards on 4th down. So on that drive, you've already got a missed face mask penalty. You should have had a fumble where, for some godforsaken reason, New York was like, all right, sorry, Dan, you can't challenge it. Yep. When it was very clearly a fumble that Newton recovered. They get a 4th down conversion. They have a screen that goes incomplete. And then Russell Wilson hits George Pickens on an absolutely insane fade ball down the sideline.
Yeah, that was tough.
Like one of the throws of the year. That ball is within a 0.5 yard of the sideline. And Pickens comes down with it.
It kind of looks like the Terry catch.
Yes. Also one of the throws of the year. And then they go Warren for 5, Warren for 3. 3rd and 2, Warren gets 10. So that's, yeah, okay, we got a bad run there. Warren for 3, and then Quan forces the fumble.
Yeah.
So the biggest plays on that drive were George Pickens slant, George Pickens fade. I don't think the run defense is the problem there. It's big pass plays in big spots. And sure, big run plays. I'll give you some of those. Like you give up, it's 4th and 1, you give up 4. That's not ideal.
I'm more so just thinking about when we say we're in the playoffs, we'll have Green Bay, great running team. We'll have the Lions, great running team. We'll have possibly the Eagles, great running team. I'm looking at those teams and seeing what they do best and see how we combat that kind of stuff. So that's the only thing I was saying because, again, when Pittsburgh needed to come back, yes, you had the big plays to Pickens down the field, the go balls. I think that's a result of us being up and having those opportunities on the
outside. That's a result of that's the way Pittsburgh plays.
Yeah, that too.
They're an extremely high variance team that doesn't really have a pass game outside of Russ throwing deep.
Yeah.
And that's what bothered me about the call at the end with St. Juice.
Leave him on an island.
Is like, what we know that's what they want to do. And yet this is where we live. Why are we living on their island? Yeah. I want to live on my own island. Would Detroit run on this team? Yeah, Detroit runs on everybody. And the question is, like, can you make enough stops, enough plays? And, like, the Commanders had a ton of run stuffs in this game. They have to then follow it up with finishing.
Yeah.
But this is also a game where they don't get the typical support from their offense. There might have been more drives in the first quarter than were in some entire games for them this year. So it was a weird game. One that I think both sides played well. One that I think if you want to be encouraged, you can take stuff out of. One that if you want to be discouraged, I think you can take stuff out of. But I do think saying like the run defense, I don't believe that is one of the glaring holes on this team at this point. They held a team that runs the mess out of the ball to under 3.5 yards a carry. So perhaps we can revisit some of your other glaring holes, but... The notes in the film don't lie. All right, when we get back here on the Hoffman Show, take some more of your calls on the Tell the Truth Monday before Michael Phillips joins us at 5. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. Michael Phillips joins us at 5 p.m., so pretty close to right now, but it is time for more of your calls at 301-230-0980 here on this Tell the Truth Monday. Let's go to our guy Doug in Richmond. Doug, thanks for holding. You're on the Hoffman Show.
Yo, what's up, Craig? That was an interesting conversation you and Anthony had before taking my call.
Thanks.
On that run defense. I mean, after yesterday, yes, that was a tough one to swallow. That was a tough one to digest. I feel like we gave that game away more than the Steelers took it, in my opinion. There were opportunities there, but six drops are killer. The muff punt was killer. Like there are a lot of miscues that you can't have against bad teams. I mean, I guess good teams that we've had against bad teams. And I was telling Anthony on the phone, this feels like an extension of the Bears game where we didn't really like learn the lesson because we got bailed out from the Hail Mary. And I feel like it continued.
Let me ask you then, what lesson do you feel like they didn't learn from the Bears game?
Not taking advantage of good fields.
Yeah.
Some of the play calls in some situations were questionable. I think Chris, for the most part, caught a really good game, but I think there was like the double screen pass two times when it didn't work. It wasn't ran well. You don't need to run it. You don't need to run it again. But
they didn't run it again. They ran that once. They ran a couple of different screens that all went to crap, but there was no like the pass one with Diami. They ran once. I mean, yeah. I'm good with that. And Doug, appreciate the call. We gotta run. But like, I think sometimes we confuse, and I'm certainly guilty of this too. I'm not trying to pick on Doug or anybody else who has these thoughts, but I think sometimes we get caught up in the moment and we ascribe bad play or lack of execution to like bad decision making. And did the Commanders not learn to take advantage of good field position, or did they just not execute against a really good defense? Like, I think intellectually they know, hey, this is an opportunity. We got to do this. We got to pull out some stops here. We got to make sure that we do it with the things we're supposed to. They just didn't. And part of that is the Steelers made plays. Like the other team, I always kind of chuckle when we go, oh, the Commanders should do everything right. And then the other team, who is also trying to do everything right, makes a play. And it's like, ah, well, the Commanders messed it up. It's like, there's a couple times in my notes, let me see if I can find one real quick, where I'm just like, that's good defense. And maybe it could have been better. I'll give you an example on one of the screens. The one that got blown up where Jaden winds up keeping it. Different quarterback run. The QB draw. That thing, oh my God, is so open. One more block needs to hit. One. And it's Sam Cosmi, who's really, really good. And 97 for Pittsburgh, their defensive tackle. You can see Sam trying to turn him. And if he can seal him and get him turned, like think about pulling with your right hand, punching with your left, and turning so that if you're facing forward, now your back is to where your left was, right? And if he can seal that off and wall that off, we got a seal here and a seal there and an out. Jaden Daniels can run for 60. He is wide open. And there's no safety for 30 yards. So maybe not 60, but we're talking big gain. Probably gets them in field goal range as is. Dude just fights, will not let Cosmi turn him. And I was talking with, I won't say who, because but point is, I was talking to someone after the game who had talked with Cosmi, and he's like, he wishes he would have set differently, used a little bit different technique. Okay, fine. I own that. Or, you know, I acknowledge that. But also, I'm going to give credit to the Pittsburgh dude who just fought and won the rep, because that's football and it happens. And often in screens and draws and these run plays, especially where you have to get the blocking right, seven guys do it perfectly and the eighth guy just loses by a half a yard, and that half a yard is enough to knock the running back's legs into each other and make a tackle. And if that thing gets past that one guy, it's a 30-yard gain. That's the league. It's why you watch the tape. And I know, oh, you got to watch the tape is annoying, but you see that kind of stuff and you see it every single week. And it's why I think the immunity that I have to some of the swinging narratives is maybe a little bit stronger, because there's just stuff that you see that you understand, and why coaches, I think, feel that way. But I will say this. Here's the thing I will say about watching the tape. I do think at times you have to be able to zoom out and be like, wow, this thing that's so close keeps happening. Why can't we get it right? And sometimes it can be an excuse. Like, oh, it's so close on tape. It's like, okay, well, it's so close every week. So when can you go from close to doing it? And I think the screen game is, like the running back screen game specifically, is at that point where they doesn't feel like they've hit one of those in weeks. And they can't even get one completed, nevertheless, you know, effective down the field. Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. When we get back, Michael Phillips joins us for his take on the game. Then we go around the NFL at 5:30.